Welcome back to the Young Turks, everybody. It's Wednesday, I think. I think it's Wednesday.
It's Wednesday.
Cenk is out, but I'm here. Johnny Arola, Anna Kasparian joining me again. I feel like it's been a little bit since we've done a show together.
It has been, yes.
Yeah, but you're going to be joining me in the first hour,
yes.
And then you're going to be leading with Brett Ehrlich in the second hour.
Mm-hmm.
We've got just a ton to get to across these 2 hours. There's not a lot that's particularly light.
Right.
But, you know, we live in a serious time in our country, and we're going to treat it with the serious approach that it deserves. What are you looking forward to in the second hour?
What am I looking forward to in the second hour?
I know that you're excited in the first hour about an update. Not excited, but you're very interested in an update on the civil asset forfeiture law.
To be quite honest with you,
I mean, I'm
always excited about covering the stories that we put in our rundown, but I'm excited to do the show with Brett.
Oh, I see.
Brett's no.
The part of it I'm not. No, I'm kidding.
John,
I'm kidding.
It's always a pleasure to do the show with
you. Yeah.
But Brett's funny.
Yeah. Okay. He is funny. I will give you that.
Yeah.
And I will admit up front, sometimes people say that we don't cover the most important pressing news, and today that is going to be true. Tucker Carlson had an awesome breakdown of one of the biggest threats facing America, and that's gypsies. And we're not going to be talking about it in any detail today.
He's concerned.
So I apologize to our audience, okay? You're gonna have to go elsewhere for your gypsy news today. I'm not even joking. Him and Breitbart and Fox News and the Daily Caller are all talking about gypsies. 2017, nothing makes any sense. Anyway, why don't we jump into the big news of the day, some of the biggest policies under consideration right now. Donald Trump and the GOP are effectively openly feuding at this point about whose fault it is that TrumpCare failed, that it looks like it's not going to be passed, and what the path forward should be. There's multiple options being advocated for, in most cases mutually exclusive options being advocated for by the same person, Donald Trump, who, depending on what hour you check in with him on, it's impossible to say what he thinks should be done.
He thinks big things. Tremendous
big,
things.
Big things,
okay.
Things that can't fit within one brain. He says repeal and replace with something like TrumpCare, even though he doesn't seem to know what that is. Repeal and then wait and then replace someday. Just repeal, don't repeal at all, just let it fail on its own, which will happen now. Or wait, maybe it'll actually happen in 6 months, and so we'll just wait until the midterms and they get more Republican senators and then we can replace it. Or we need to pass the bill, we're gonna repeal and replace actually. And all of that inside of about 27 hours.
Yeah.
And so if you're a senator on the Republican side or a congressperson, I have no idea what you're supposed to think or what you're supposed to do in trying to parse all that.
Right, because, well, here's what I think you should do if you are a Republican senator or if you're a senator, period. If you are an elected official, don't listen to Trump's threats. Don't listen to what he wants and don't try to appease him because he very clearly doesn't care about being loyal to you or looking out for you. Listen to your constituents and what they want. And I think that's what's happening.
Tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans. Well, clearly,
that's obviously not
regular people want it.
That's obviously not true. But you know, I think what's interesting is we have this rare moment where we have moderate GOP senators listening to their
moderate,
relatively speaking,
yes.
And relative to some of the more insane right wingers that we have in office. But the moderate Republicans are actually listening to the concerns of their constituents.
Yeah.
And so they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place because they don't know whether it makes sense to appease Trump. It doesn't make sense to appease Trump. It makes sense to represent the people who actually elected you into office.
Yeah, yeah. So look, he had a big meeting with many of the senators, some of the senators who were considered no votes on various proposals, because as I said, there are many at this point. And so I wanna go through a couple of videos, some of the highlights from this meeting. So first of all, in this video, you'll see an indication that Donald Trump still thinks that they can push through and do something soon, actually before the August recess. Here are his thoughts on that.
We have no choice. We have to repeal and replace Obamacare. We can repeal it, but the best is repeal and replace, and let's get going. But I'm ready to act. For 7 years, you promised the American people that you would repeal Obamacare. People are hurting. Inaction is not an option. And frankly, I don't think we should leave town unless we have a health insurance plan unless we can give our people great health care.
Well, see, really fast, that's interesting because he's saying the senators shouldn't leave town for their August recess unless we have a plan. It'll be interesting to see if he can forego leaving this weekend to play golf. We'll find out. Mm-hmm. Is he going to leave or not? But as I said earlier, a couple of the senators who he is most trying to get over onto his side are not only at the meeting, but actually sitting right next to him. And look at an interaction with Senator Heller that he had.
The other night, I was very surprised when I heard a couple of my friends, they really were and are. They might not be very much longer, but that's okay. I think I have to get them back. That's right. Well, no, you didn't go out there. This was the one we were worried about. You weren't there, but you're going to be. Look, he wants to remain a senator, doesn't he? Okay. And I think the people of your state, which I know very well, I think they're going to appreciate what you hopefully will do.
Well, what he did, thankfully, was stop the law from being passed,
right,
which I'm sure they will appreciate.
Right. Look, make no mistake, if his constituents were clear about how they wanted to repeal the Affordable Care Act and replace it with what the Senate had proposed, he would have done it. But he didn't do it because he listened to his constituents. So for those constituents, my question to you is, don't you find it insulting that Trump is essentially threatening his position as a senator there,
mm-hmm,
right? Essentially telling you as an American voter that your vote is not as important, that your opinions are not as important, that your best interests are not as important. What's important is that this senator listened to the wants and the needs of Donald Trump just so he can point at how he supposedly made a deal, that he actually did something. Exactly.
Yeah. So I want to go to one more video from him because, as I said, he keeps jumping from repeal and to repeal and replace and back and forth as if those things are very similar. So let's go to one more video of Donald Trump.
And we should hammer this out and get it done. And not just a repeal. Hey, it was sort of early on, along with a few of the other folks at the table. The repeal was fine. I was with it. But we ought to get more than a repeal. I think the people of this country need more than a repeal. They need a repeal and a replace. And we were very, very close.
And see, that statement there scares me. I mean, you're not going to be surprised to find out that he doesn't know anything about healthcare policy or health insurance. But he's talking about those terms as if the word repeal and the word replace have independent meaning in regard to health insurance. As if we need a replace. But you're talking about it as like, maybe we just get repeal. Maybe we get repeal and replace. Well, those are fundamentally different approaches or answers to the question of what is wrong with the American healthcare system. Mm-hmm. Okay, if you think that repeal is what needs to happen, then you think that the ACA, Obamacare, is the cause of our problems. And government regulation getting involved with health insurance companies, that is the problem. That's driving up premiums or whatever things you think it's doing. Repeal and replace implies that independent of the ACA, there are problems with our health insurance and healthcare industry, and government does need to get involved, perhaps in a different way than the ACA, to fix those problems. And that's why replace can mean 100 different things. It can mean we repeal most of Obamacare and we give hundreds of billions of dollars of tax cuts to the richest Americans, or it means we replace Obamacare with single payer. You can input almost anything into that word. But his understanding of it is shallower than the water that robot committed suicide in yesterday. And he's the person who's supposed to be helping the Republicans to get it done. That is horrifying.
Right. And there's also a complete lack of understanding how government works. Because in that last video that we played for you guys, he makes it seem as though they were seconds away with coming up with a replacement plan for the Affordable Care Act. But that's not how government works. House has its version. The Senate was supposed to vote in favor of their version.
Yeah.
Obviously, there are differences between the two. And then, you know, they come together and negotiate and come up with a plan that they both the House and the Senate can agree on. That's how Congress works. But he seems, I don't know if he is unaware of that or if he likes to play the role of stupid because he thinks that appeals to some of his voters. I don't know.
I grew up with some people like that. It's possible.
It's possible. I mean, it could be part of his strategy. I have no idea. But Congress is not anywhere close to coming up with a replacement plan for the Affordable Care Act. In fact, they're not even close to deciding what they want to do. If they want to just repeal it, if they want to keep it in place. it's just it's maddening. And by the way, things keep changing so quickly that it's hard for, you know, those who are supposed to do analysis and to check on these types of policies to do their job. So, yeah. For instance, the CBO, this is breaking news, just released numbers on what would likely happen to Americans if they had decided to just repeal Obamacare without a replacement. The congressional budget analyst estimated Wednesday that a Senate plan to repeal part of the Affordable Care Act with no immediate replacement would increase the number of people without health coverage by 17 million next year, and 32 million by the end of a decade. And so there are real ramifications to what's happening right now.
Yeah.
And again, there's a lot of uncertainty, there's a lot of fear, a lot of people don't know what they can expect. And keep in mind that the health insurance industry doesn't like uncertainty either. So they are likely to raise premiums to kind of make up for that uncertainty.
Exactly. There's one other thing I want to talk about. Donald Trump has gotten a lot of criticism from our show, primarily, I think, but from a lot of quarters that he doesn't fundamentally know the facts about health insurance. I was just saying that. But a lot of people think that that's not just, hey, it's sad that our president doesn't know the details of one of the most important things that needs to be done, a problem that needs to be solved in America, but also that it's actually hurting his party's chance of passing some sort of alternate plan. And so he can't talk about what's in the Senate bill because he doesn't seem to understand it. If you were to give him a couple of terms, he wouldn't remember them because they're not attached to any concepts in his brain. And I think that that's why they tried to prepare him a little bit for this meeting. And so Jared Jackson went through and compiled some of the things that he referenced about the plan. Now he is actually talking in specifics about it, but I want you to watch this video because I want you to look at the way that he talked about those specifics. You'll see that here.
We never sell our plan. If we're weak on anything, it's on letting people know how good it was. So we wrote down these few things. Repeals the individual mandate. Repeals job-killing employer mandate. Will substantially lower premiums. Your premiums will be down 60 and 70%. People don't know that. Repeals burdensome taxes, big. Also provides for expanded coverage options, the options. Will stabilize insurance markets. Will protect pre-existing condition coverage. You're gonna have better pre-existing than they had in their plan. Will allow the use of pre-tax dollars to pay premiums. Will devote substantial resources to fight opioid and other substance abuse. Will provide better coverage for low-income Americans. Puts Medicaid on a sustainable path, which it's not on right now. Reforms major entitlements, now a principal driver of the $20 trillion debt that we have.
So look, you know, we can pick apart the various lies that were implicit in that, the 60 to 70% premium drops and all that. It's absolute BS. But he had some, so JR printed up his talking points because that's what he was given. They knew that he wouldn't be able to go to that meeting and talk about the bill with authority, with actual knowledge. And so they did what you should do for politicians. I'm not even knocking the aides. They printed up things for him to sort of extemporaneously refer to and, oh yeah, okay, let me talk about the taxes. But instead, this knucklehead just reads the literal words in a bullet point list out because they don't mean anything to him. And you saw, you couldn't see Anna's reaction, but when he was talking about the pre-existing conditions, he said you'll have better pre-existing than you have now. Because he has no idea what that actually means. He doesn't know why people talk about pre-existing conditions or how historically they made it harder for you to get health insurance and how we're worried about that coming back. To him, the word pre-existing just means something. And so he just throws it out there as a buzzword.
Well, we're gonna have
because
better
this means nothing to him.
Right. And it's interesting because we already know based on polling that his base has remained very loyal to him. But I'm curious what his base, if you just sit down and have a polite conversation with them, a civil discussion, and bring up the fact that he just said it repeals the employer mandate. That essentially means that if you are a company that employs a certain number of people under the Affordable Care Act, you are required to provide health insurance, right? So he just bragged about how the replacement plan would do away with that. So your employer doesn't have to provide you that benefit. Is that something that his base is in favor of?
Maybe some people value their company's bottom line more than their family's health.
I certainly think that they have been disinformed to the point that, you know, they unfortunately vote in favor of things like that without realizing how much that it would actually negatively affect them. But again, I mean, he just bragged about, yeah, your employer doesn't have to provide any this benefit that would save your life.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Exactly.
But well, whatever.
I'm glad that you brought up loyalty, actually, because I want to turn to a related topic. Whether Trump's base stays loyal to him, I think it's perhaps a more pressing question to consider whether the House will stay loyal to him. Because obviously it's controlled by the Republicans, which means that they can accomplish pretty much whatever they want, at least in the House and mostly in the Senate as well. And while the Senate wasn't able to pass a version of Trump Care, the House actually did it. After initially failing, they eventually were able to push something through that you have to bet someday is going to bite them on the ass when it comes to campaign ads being run against them, because it would kick tens of millions of people off their health insurance. But they did it. And they did it with the assurances that it would pay off, because eventually the Senate would also do it, the whole party would be together, and they'd at least be able to say that they accomplished something. But at least right now, it doesn't look like that's actually going to happen, which means that those House Republicans put their ass on the line, and they are just going to get the negative for it. They're going to be attacked.
Good.
They're potentially going to be primaried.
Good.
I think that's good, but from their point of view, probably not so good. And it turns out that they're pissed at Donald Trump. So we've got some quotes.
This is from Representative. Are you not taking personal responsibility for the way you voted? Are you upset? Oh, okay. Well, go ahead. Let's hear from them.
We're going to hear from the poor babies. So Representative Mark Emmerdale of Nevada said, "We agreed that there was not much use in criticizing the Senate while they were going through their process, and I agree with that. I just find it interesting to note the number of geniuses serving in the US Senate. Politically, I love that line. Politically, it all still needs fixing, whether the Senate does nothing, whether we walked the plank or whatever." Whether we walked the plank or whatever.
Yeah.
Hold on, the way it's described is, after an extended diatribe about the process and all the quote bovine scat flying around on the policy debate, Amadei walked away, only to return to admit he was quote pissed at how the Senate dropped the ball.
Oh, okay. So you're upset. I love how he is belittling the intelligence of members of the Senate, while he complains about voting for legislation that he maybe didn't necessarily believe in because he wanted to appease the emperor, right? Who's the dumb one in this scenario, right?
I think everybody.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair. But I would argue that moderate Republicans who actually took a principled stand and said, no, I don't think my constituents are in favor of this, I'm actually going to represent them and not cave to someone like Trump, I think they're a little smarter, I know you're a little upset because you're not principled in any way and you feel like this is going to negatively impact you, but it should negatively impact you.
Yeah. Well, look, it wasn't just him. We also have Daryl Issa, who said the Senate dropped the ball. They had almost a blank palette and they scribbled on it and came up with nothing. Well, they came up with scribbles, at the very least, that could be fun. And there were other representatives who weren't willing to go on the record also expressing how mad they were. And so I don't cover this because I care about their feelings, I really don't. But it is interesting from the point of view of a Trump defender, will Trump be able to count on the House to pass controversial legislation that could potentially damage them after this experience, after trying it once and being burned? Are they going to be there? You know, the whole shame on fool me once, can't get fooled again. Maybe they can't get fooled again, and we'll have to wait and find out.
Yes, they'll do it every time, and they'll do it again. You notice, first of all, one of them, from what I read, the one who was most scathing of those anonymous congressional members that was mad about the way this came forward, he said, well, you know what? In order to speak candidly about it, I'd like to go ahead and just really lay into it, so don't give them my name. So that gives another, like, you have to think about every aspect of the way these politicians work. Hey, you guys, don't say my name because what I'm about to say will get me in trouble. So do you mean it?
Yeah.
So when you mean it, you can't say your name, because then if you say what you really mean as a politician, you're not going to be a politician anymore. Just think about the nature of this whole system. I can't say who I am because they're going to kill me if they hear what I really feel about what I'm doing. It answers the question we always ask. They know how bad everything is. They know how bad the legislation they put forward is. They know they're going to get bad negative campaign ads put against them, or just campaigns in general against them, because they know how bad it is. It has nothing to do with doing their job. It has
That's
to do
right.
with keeping
well,
their job.
We will see on the next one.
To continue
you
to continue to deceive American people. It has nothing to do with their real job.
So, that's possible.
Just real quick, Washington Post ABC News poll indicates that just 24% of Americans said they wanted to see the repeal effort succeed. 24%. That is a small portion of our population who think, hey, yeah, it's a really good idea for this repeal effort to go through.
Yeah.
you're an idiot if you don't listen to your voters and you decide to concede to someone like Donald Trump, who has the intelligence of an 8-year-old. Like, don't go ahead and criticize the intelligence or question the intelligence of moderate Republicans who refuse to vote in favor of something that was deeply unpopular.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway. I can't believe I'm defending some Republicans, but
no, you're on the record. Okay, I'm posting on Reddit about it. Anyway, we're gonna take a short break. When we come back, we have updates on the Muslim travel ban as well as the voter fraud commission. But as we throw to this break, I'd like you to play video 6 because you're gonna see a particular brown noser that you might recognize from earlier during the last campaign, who still looks clearly is trying to get a job with Donald Trump once again. So watch this video, and then we'll see you in just a few.
Look, I know that the president is a great deal maker, and we were very, very close on this piece of legislation. I think this bill is going to get done. The president's probably going to close the deal today. And if that's the case, this bill moves forward.
Wow. What is your source on that? Is that a gut feeling or is that a sourced feeling?
No, my source is I know the president. I know he's a great deal maker. I know he's going to do whatever it takes to get this done.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. John and Anna, you heard some quotes from Trump there, and I think it was Now This News. I saw an awesome compilation of all the times over the past year and a half that Trump said we're going to replace it, and it's going to be quick, it's going to be so easy, so fast, day one, instantly. What a goofus. Okay, we've got some tweets from you guys. I want to read hashtag TYT live tweets. Rory, there's a lot of tweets about the attempt to do Trump care. Rory Dennis says, repeal and replace. Isn't that how Trump described his first two divorces? Oh, anyway. Tosh Moore said, who thought that an imbecile would make such an incompetent president? Nobody could have known.
Nobody could have known.
Nobody could have known, okay? But we're finding out more
in,
every day.
Idiot goes out.
You're hearing more about it every day. Let's see. Nick, the gaming Pegasus says, George W. Bush was a useful idiot to the GOP. Trump isn't useful, he's just an idiot. That is totally true. And by the way, so I was scrolling through and I saw one of the past polls. I think it might have been yesterday's poll, I'm not sure. I apologize if you already heard the results, but I found them to be interesting. So the question was, do you think Fox News is turning on Donald Trump? And I know that that's Cenk's theory now. He saw a bunch of Fox hosts that were all sort of doing that. And the results were not what I expected. Yes was at 61.4%, no at 38.6%. So the majority of the audience does in fact think that Fox News, which has been big defenders of Trump for quite a while now, are turning on him. That would actually be pretty powerful if it did happen.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't really in favor of him to begin with, and then
certainly not at the beginning.
Not at the beginning.
But I think they learned to love their dear leader. The only people who are, I mean, you'll know it's bad when Steve Doocy calls him a name. Until then, I think he's still got a bastion of support on Fox News. Anyway, with that, why don't we jump back into the news? If you've been confused while trying to follow the legal developments in the court cases, the various court cases in different states around the country having to do with Donald Trump's Muslim travel ban, then I certainly can't blame you. It has been confusing. But you should bear in mind while looking at these constant back and forths that the court rulings so far in the travel restrictions haven't been any final decisions on whether they're legal. Judges are just considering whether the ban could go into effect while the litigation continued on the underlying merits of the executive order. So there are these various court challenges, and we will know definitively, or at least semi-definitively, on October 10th when the Supreme Court gives the travel ban a full review. What we've had so far are attempts to temporarily block the imposition of the entire travel ban or sections of it, to define certain terms in regard to it. But all of these back and forths are really only temporary measures until the Supreme Court does that review in October. Now, that being said, we do have another development to add on to what you'd previously learned. And this has to do with Donald Trump's attempt to block people using having grandparents and other close family members as a rationale for being allowed to enter the country. He didn't want that to be able to be the case. And the Supreme Court is not, they don't agree with him, although he did get something out of what was revealed today. So the court, in a one-page order just today, prohibited the Trump administration from banning travel by people from 6 Muslim-majority countries who have grandparents, aunts, uncles, and other extended family members or residents in the US. That's sort of the good news for those people. Unfortunately, justices said his administration could move ahead for now with plans to impose the ban on a broad group of refugees coming from multiple countries. So a little give, a little take there on the ban. So the ban is not halted. It is a little bit less strict, at least temporarily.
Well, I'm just glad that, you know, Trump is using this incredibly critical time to figure out what the hell is going on, because he just needed the 6 months to figure out what the hell is going on. And, you know, he hasn't quite been in office for, oh, wait a minute. He had a lot of time to figure out what the hell is going on. But
he doesn't know what's going on.
He's busy holding meetings with world leaders at Trump properties so he can line his pockets with the position that he has. But no one cares about that conflict of interest. Mm-hmm. He's busy golfing, going to Florida. I mean, those are all really important things. And so, you know, he hasn't been able to figure out what the hell is going on.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that we are now wasting our precious resources on trying to adjudicate how this travel ban can legally move forward.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's frustrating. I think that, you know, his fear-mongering and the fear-mongering from the right has unfortunately worked to the point where people needlessly support this ridiculous travel ban. But whatever, I mean, if you'd rather see taxpayer money go toward this effort than taking care of our actual citizens, then that's fine. And that's the thing, they think that this is gonna take care of us, right? They're not looking into, you know, right-wing terrorism in the country. They're not looking at, you know, actual issues that put our safety in jeopardy. They're just looking at these non-existent threats from refugees, people who literally want to escape death and persecution in their own countries.
Yeah. Well, look, I will say that throughout the year, there have been a number of big movements and marches and rallies on a number of different issues. You've had, you know, having to do with Donald Trump's taxes or climate science, the Women's March. But there was also a big, not just one day, it was multiple days of rallying at airports that many members of TYT went to. I was lucky enough to be able to go twice to the LA branch of it. To protect people's access to the country, to not stigmatize and in fact block these people from these various countries from coming in. And there were a lot of people across the country organizing for that. And I don't know that I would have expected that would have drawn as much support because of what we fear about people's xenophobia that they've learned from the right. You know, it's one thing to organize for climate science, it's another to organize, you know, for women. But this is almost purely, aside from obviously some American Muslims who are organizing for, a lot of people who are doing it for people that they don't know, but because they believe it's right. And so I found that to be very inspirational earlier this year. Now, we don't know what's gonna happen on October 10th when the Supreme, or later than October 10th, but when the Supreme Court considers this and eventually releases a ruling, we don't know if the entire thing will be upheld or knocked down or if some part of it will go into effect and others won't. We're sort of just trying to read from their interim opinions what they might think. And we do know that three justices, Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, and Neil Gorsuch, the newest member of the Supreme Court, said that they would have allowed the president to bar travel by extended family members. So your grandma is too big of a threat, according to at least those three justices. And the rest, we don't know where they're gonna come out on it. And so there is still, while there's been, you know, at the federal court level, at the appeals court level, there have been good developments since the inauguration. There's also been a lot of reason to fear that the entire thing could someday become law. It's something that we were worried about before the election, and there's still reason to worry about it today. Anyway, let's move on to another thing perhaps we should worry about. Donald Trump's Voter Fraud Commission, or what I like to think of as the Fraudulent Voting Commission, is still pushing forward on its quest to do two things, to suppress American voting in as many ways as possible, and on the other hand, to make Donald Trump feel better about losing the popular vote. And this week, it had its first big meeting where the members of the commission came together and talked about what some of their goals were when it comes to investigating this mythical voter fraud that they think is going on across the country. And so we've got a couple of videos we wanna show you. First, we've got the vice president making clear what his objective is in all this.
You know, it's the greatest privilege of my life to serve as vice president to a president who cares so deeply about the integrity of America's elections and the right of each and every American to see the sanctity of their vote protected.
It is impressive that Mike Pence can keep his hair so glisteningly purely white when he just gets his face in Donald Trump's ass cheeks and just goes to town there. But it still just stays pristine. It's like an Arctic slope.
Oh God, that was imagery that I did not need.
But anyway, okay. he's overjoyed because Donald Trump wants to protect the vote. That's what he wants. That's why he would choose someone like Kobach. We'll return to his record to be in charge of this thing. But there he was talking about Donald Trump. Why don't we go to a little bit of Donald Trump and he will make clear what some of his priorities are.
This issue is very important to me because throughout the campaign, and even after it, people would come up to me and express their concerns about voter inconsistencies and irregularities, which they saw, in some cases having to do with very large numbers of people in certain states.
So I always find it really interesting how whenever there's a negative article written about Donald Trump or his administration, sometimes there will be some anonymous sources, members of the administration or people in the White House who speak out against him and talk to reporters. And they're angry about that. Like, how dare you? You know, we need to be specific about who these sources are. But when it comes to anything Trump says, he's never specific.
Yeah.
So, okay. Who are these people who come to you and they claim that they experienced or saw firsthand that there's been voter fraud? There is no voter fraud. Study after study indicates that there is no voter fraud. So why is it that Trump is so up in arms about this issue, which doesn't really seem to be an issue at all? It's because he can't handle the fact, he and his ridiculous ego cannot handle the fact that millions more voted for his opponent,
yeah.
Right? And so he like obsesses over this and wants to prove so badly that no, I won the popular vote along with the Electoral College. Like, no, you didn't win the popular vote. There aren't millions of people who are illegally voting in the country. You have no evidence of that. You've provided no evidence of that. You just say things without providing evidence or without being specific. And right now, we literally have this assault on Americans' voting rights and this, you know, intimidation campaign where this ridiculous commission is going to secretaries of state and asking for private information or, you know, voter information, I should say.
So they can just
last four digits of social security numbers, just information that they would put out there and publish so hackers can get their hands on it and do whatever they please. I mean, it's ridiculous. And regardless of where you are on the political spectrum, you should be concerned about what they're doing.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you brought up that particular attempt to gather up all of this information. A lot of people were extremely and I think justifiably worried about that. And Donald Trump thinks the reaction from the states, that's what we should be worried about. He's going to go on that here.
If any state does not want to share this information, one has to wonder what they're worried about. And I asked the vice president, I asked the commission, what are they worried about? There's something, there always is.
I'm actually, why don't you release your tax returns? Why won't you release your tax returns?
What are you worried about, Donald Trump?
What are you worried about? What's the big deal? Why don't you release those returns? Why is it that members of your administration didn't disclose these meetings with Russians? I mean, what are they worried about? Why didn't they disclose it if there wasn't any collusion going on?
This only applies to voter fraud.
No, I know, he is the most, he is not transparent at all, and he has the audacity to say that these officials in these states who are protecting their voters are the bad guys because they have something to hide. No, they refuse to give in to your ridiculous ego fest where you can't handle the fact that millions more voted for your opponent.
Yeah.
Okay, you still won the election. You still have the opportunity to destroy this country and the world if you wanted to, right? And so just be happy about that.
Yeah.
Like, move on with your life.
Yes. So look, I agree with you that I think for the most part, Donald Trump's personal sort of investment in this commission does have to do with his fears about being seen to be a loser in the popular vote. But that's not the part that I'm most worried about, of course, as I wasn't just joking in the beginning that it really is about those two things, his personal feelings and ego, but also about the voter suppression. And when it comes to that component, Donald Trump is not the person you need to be worried about, and Mike Pence isn't really the person you need to be worried about. There is a third person, and that is Kris Kobach, and you're gonna see him in this clip.
Individual states from time to time may have investigated specific allegations of voter fraud or have done some specific investigation of voter fraud. For example, in my state of Kansas, we're engaged in litigation right now defending our proof of citizenship requirements at the time of registration. And we've engaged in extensive fact finding for the federal courts involved and have discovered 128 specific cases of non-citizens who either registered to vote or attempted to register to vote. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. One expert in the case estimated that the total number could be in excess of 18,000 on our voter rolls.
So Kris Kobach is one of perhaps the biggest liars in the entire country. His only objective as a human being is to stop as many Americans from voting as humanly possible, and he will lie brazenly to accomplish that. Kris Kobach was in a position that if there was voter fraud, actual voter fraud in his state, he was the Secretary of State, but he wasn't just the Secretary of State. In this particular area, he was a super Secretary of State, because he alone amongst all the Secretaries of State across the country could actually bring charges against people who committed various forms of voter fraud. Mm-hmm. And with all of that power and all of this personal investment in tracking this down, he brought charges successfully against one person. Now, I love the concept that every vote is sacred and every vote can change the world, but I think it's exaggerating to say that his ability to find one person who broke the law is proof that we need a nationwide commission to drastically change the way America votes that is likely to disenfranchise literally hundreds of thousands or millions of Americans. So in his extended comments, Kobach talked about some of the things that you can expect out of this commission in very nice language, like accuracy of voter rolls, vote fraud, voting by mail, which is a big fear, cybersecurity and voter intimidation. And you might think, well, look, those sound like things that we should look into if you've been sort of at least passively affected by right-wing propaganda when it comes to voter fraud. But you should understand the history of Kobach. Kobach is famous for his crusade against the mobile voter program and has been sued at least three times for trying to make it harder to vote in his state of Kansas. The most recent concern was that he illegally blocked tens of thousands from registering before the 2016 election. And he didn't just do it in Kansas, he literally has gone around the country helping to pass state level laws to make it harder to vote in a number of different ways. Also getting involved in things like the Arizona Papers Please Law, which isn't directly necessarily voted, but he just really wanted to give the middle finger to those people. And so he is the person you need to worry about. We don't know exactly what they're gonna do to disenfranchise Americans on a mass scale, but we know what his goal is, we know what his track record is, and now he has a federal mandate to do this to the entire country.
Right, and also keep in mind that this is really about a political party that understands and realizes that their constant support for corporate interests and their inability or their negligence in representing the American people is working against them, right? And so since they know that they can't get the votes that they need to stay in office the right way, right, by maintaining our democratic process, they've decided that they'll do things like redistricting or passing ridiculous voter ID laws that, oh, what a coinkydink. They specifically impact people who lean Democrat and vote for Democratic candidates. They would rather cheat than represent the American people. And that's what's really going on right now. And this whole notion of them collecting all of this private information on American voters is part of an intimidation campaign. Yeah. And I applaud these secretaries of state that are saying, no, we're not giving into it. And by the way, these are not just Democrats, these are Republicans as well. And I think that it takes principle and strength to do that, to stand up to this commission, and I'm glad that they're doing it.
Yeah, directly related to that, I've heard that unfortunately, because of all this news that came out about them trying to gather up this information, a lot of people have deregistered. They don't want their information to be made public in this way. But understand that, as we have said, a lot of states did block the release of that information. And so if you did deregister, please register again. If you're considering deregistering, do not allow them to preemptively take away your ability to influence American politics. That is what we're going to use to take back the country. They don't want you to exercise that. Don't give them that pleasure. Now, we do have to take our second break. When we come back, lots more to cover. A really interesting and worrying case of potential conflict of interest and corruption when it comes to Jared Kushner. And we also have a change in how police may be able to seize assets across the country coming from our attorney general. All that and more when we come back from this break. So Ann and I were having fun talking during the break, and I've got to load the tweets. But welcome back to the show. We're gonna have, I think, two more stories for you. I'm excited about both. I wish we could get to the last one, but that's probably gonna have to wait until tomorrow. And with that, we do have some tweets. I was able to vamp until I got my thing out. Anyway, hashtag TYT Live, you guys were messaging us. We're gonna read some now. Ish Kabibble says, I don't know about you, but the GOP has done much more harm to me than ISIS has ever done. Them's fighting words, Ish. Don't let them hear you say that. Daniel Perea says, no, there is a little voter fraud in the US, but it's mostly Republicans committing it. Yeah, I mean, look, I would even count that as like anecdotal. It's very small numbers, but there are one or two arrests that happen near election day.
Right.
The ridiculous thing is this idea that there are millions of people breaking the law to vote. Man, we fight to convince half the country to vote when they legally can.
Exactly. And they know that. They know that it's really difficult to get Americans to the polls.
Yeah.
And so it's just, they're so disingenuous, and they know that voter fraud isn't a real issue. This is really about doing away with potential voters, intimidating them and pressuring them to not be part of a democratic process. And yeah. I think that's the real crime.
And especially the idea that it's illegal immigrants who are doing it. Like, you're a person who is probably worried now for years or decades that somebody's gonna find out and they're gonna ship you home. And so you, as undocumented immigrants, do commit crimes at lower rates than native born Americans. Mm-hmm. The numbers bear that out. But you know what? I just have to vote. Damn the law. Maybe they'll send me back. I don't care. I have to cast them. It's just so ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's not happening. Don't buy into the hype. Anyway, with that, let's jump back into the news. Last month, Jared Kushner hosted a big meeting of tech company CEOs and venture capitalists to discuss tech policy with the president, with Donald Trump. They wanted to advise him, set the agenda going forward. And there you had some big leaders of companies that you might have heard of, like Apple and Microsoft, these massive tech giants. And you also had Zachary Bookman, the 37-year-old CEO of startup OpenGov. Now, you probably don't have an OpenGov phone or an OpenGov laptop. You've probably never heard of it before because it is not an Apple and it's not a Microsoft. It is not a gigantic corporation. It does, however, aim to make government data more user-friendly and has sought business with the federal government, according to its website. So that's what it does. It has to do with government transparency, which sounds good, but still suspicious that a company no one has ever heard of before was at this meeting with the likes of an Apple and a Microsoft. In fact, he was the only chief executive of a small firm among the 18 tech leaders that were chosen. And if you bring up this chart, you're gonna see the market capitalization, I believe, of those different, the market value of those different companies. So you have like things like Apple, Alphabet, and we're talking about dozens of billions of dollars on average, and then OpenGov's down at the bottom, 0.18, way smaller than even the next smaller, which seems sort of weird until you find out the connection that that CEO, that company has to high place members of Trump's inner circle. Mr. Kushner, Jared Kushner, who organized it, his brother, through a venture capital firm called Thrive Capital, is a part owner of OpenGov, according to government disclosures. Until earlier this year, Mr. Kushner himself owned stakes in that venture capital firm that he sold to his brother. Now, lest you believe that Mr. Kushner is helping out his immediate family by inviting someone there who has no real cause to be there, a spokesman for Thrive said the company did not play any role in OpenGov's invitation and was not aware of its participation in the meeting until after the fact. And Mr. Kushner didn't suggest the invitation to OpenGov, according to his government tech innovation office.
I'm sure they're telling the truth.
Yeah, well, look, they reached out to Mr. Bookman, the CEO. He said he thinks his company was invited because it, quote, is recognized as an industry leader for our work at the state and local level. Although a law professor who deals with conflict of interest law and things like that says this seems like a textbook example of cronyism in action. But right. If you're gonna choose 18 tech CEOs, there's a lot of people to choose. It seems odd that you had to have someone connected with your brother, even though his company is just a fraction of the size and influence of the others. And by the way, this is a federal policy focused group, mm-hmm. and OpenGov works at the local and state level. It hasn't had any federal contracts. So even more reason that it should be suspicious that he was there.
Right. Well, I'm sure it wants federal contracts.
That is true.
And so this is yet another symptom of a larger issue that we noticed with this administration. And some Americans have just decided that it's not a big deal that you have members of the administration that have clear conflicts of interest. And the reason why conflicts of interest are a problem is because it goes against everything that Trump's voters said that they wanted, right? Like, they're tired they're tired of the elites. They're tired of being the forgotten ones, being the people who aren't represented. Well, look what's happening in government right now. You have Donald Trump funneling money to his own properties by holding all these meetings with foreign leaders at Trump properties. You have Jared Kushner's family traveling to China and trying to persuade wealthy Chinese investors to pour in $500,000 in Kushner properties just so they can get their golden visa or launder some money, right? And so that's a huge conflict of interest, which they got some criticism for.
From us.
From us. But that's the frustrating part, John, right? Like, if you are part of Trump's base, I understand the frustrations that you've been feeling, that you don't feel like this economy has been working for you, that you've been forgotten. I get it, right? But do you really think that these people are looking out for you? Do you think that Kushner's concerned about you? Do you think Trump's concerned about you? Time and time again, they've proven to us that they have used their position of power to funnel money and line their own pockets.
Yes.
Right? And that's exactly what's happening here. Here is this startup company that's tiny, minuscule, honestly has no business being at this meeting. And the reason why they went there and had that opportunity was because of their ties to the Kushner family.
Yeah, look. I try to be fair with any person or organization other than Donald Trump. And so I looked into this company, and in some cases it looks like they've done fine work. They did some work for a state, I think it was Ohio, I apologize, I didn't write it down, so don't quote me. But their ranking in terms of government transparency on the state level was pretty bad. They implemented this new software and they shot up the list there. And so that's a good thing. And so I'm not saying that theoretically this company couldn't have some value. But does anyone actually believe that they were there based on merit and not because it could enrich the immediate family of Trump's advisors? Does anyone seriously believe that?
I mean, I'm sure someone will buy into that argument. But I just want to be clear about something.
Steve Doocy.
If this was a startup company that had absolutely no financial ties to the Kushner family or members of Trump's administration, and they were invited to take part in this meeting, I would have no problem with it whatsoever.
Yeah.
The size of the company is not an issue for me. I think that it's important to hear from, you know, various tech companies, regardless of how big or small they are. But my issue is that the only reason why this company was there was because of the financial ties to the Kushner family.
Yeah.
And so again, it shows you another example of a huge conflict of interest. And we're going to see this time and time again. And so if you were an American who was frustrated at elected officials and an administration that left you behind or ignored or neglected your problems, you should be livid about this.
Yeah.
Because this is cronyism to another level. Like, I didn't think that cronyism in this country could get worse.
Yeah.
But it got worse.
It did.
And I think a lot of people are asleep at the wheel as this is taking place.
Agreed. And my last point, I want to be totally fair. While I am on a certain level deeply worried about the corruption here, it is likely that they're going to get billions in government contracts. So I'm going to invest heavily in them. Anyway, I'm not actually going to do that. I don't think they're publicly traded.
I mean, if we had money, I think it'd be smart because I have no doubt that they're going to get contracts.
So I'm joking there, but I know that like some people made or lost huge amounts of money. Remember when he was tweeting about Lockheed Martin and Boeing and all that? Anyway, why don't we quickly do this story because I know you're really interested in this one.
Yes. Excuse me, I just have to get that
out. I want that to be immortalized, that cough, on YouTube for the rest of time. Under former President Barack Obama's Justice Department, Eric Holder, who led the department, increased control and oversight in the area of civil asset forfeiture, which is this process whereby law enforcement agencies across the country can seize assets in the form of money and actual property in the case that it was made as a result of a crime, criminal behavior. They had extra oversight in that for a very good reason. There was a lot of criticism of this program because in many cases, well documented on this program and on others, there was criminal abuse of this process. So that it wasn't criminals' stuff that was being taken and held. It was people who would eventually go on to be cleared of their charges. And in many cases, people who were never actually charged with a crime but couldn't actually get their resources back from the police. So credit to Barack Obama for increasing oversight in that area. Until today, when that oversight is going to be taken away, the Justice Department, with President Trump's support, will give new authority to law enforcement agencies to seize money, contraband, and property when they can prove those assets are the ill-gotten gains of criminal activity, which is a certainly nice spin on it. But we know what taking away oversight is going to do. We're going to go back to the way things were before. The proceeds, the Justice Department says, will infuse law enforcement agencies with financial resources, equipment, and training in the fight against violent crime.
This is ridiculous.
Unless they're just going to like get guns from criminals, and now we have new equipment.
Okay, fear-mongering is Republican 101. We all know that. And especially with someone like Jeff Sessions in power, we're going to see more and more of it. And the way that they're illustrating this is complete and utter bullshit. Just keeping it real. Because civil asset forfeiture disproportionately impacts individuals who have been falsely accused of possessing drugs. Mm-hmm. So you're traveling, and usually when you're traveling, you have cash on you, right? Because especially if you're going to travel to another country, it's better for you to have, you know, that currency on you. That way you don't have issues with credit cards and all that. And so a cop or, you know, anyone in a position of authority can say, there's reason to believe that this individual is trafficking drugs or in possession of drugs. All they have to do is say that there's some probable cause.
Purely because they have so much money, and that seems suspicious.
They can literally take your money, take your property, and say that they need it because it's part of this investigation. And they'll do an investigation, find out that you're completely innocent, but they still hold on to those assets. They don't give it back in a lot of cases, which is something, as you mentioned, we talked about on the show a great deal. And so, look, the Obama administration, in my opinion, didn't do enough on a number of issues. But at least when it came to certain justice system related issues, they did some good things, like phasing out private prisons on a federal level, and then kind of trying to reform civil asset forfeiture. But then you have Trump's administration coming into power, and they love civil asset forfeiture. Police organizations and departments throughout the country love it, because that's how they line their pockets, right? They're underfunded, okay, civil asset forfeiture. We can just collect people's property and then pay ourselves back with this. And it's been happening for a long time. And so we're shaking Americans down and taking their property when they're not even criminals and they haven't done anything wrong. And again, it disproportionately impacts people who have been accused of having possession of drugs. That is not a violent crime. So when they say that they're doing this to combat violent crime, they're lying to you.
Yeah. Well, and think about how fundamentally regressive it is. I mean, first of all, it's not like a banker is suspected of a crime and so they seize his Jag.
Yeah,
like, they're not doing that. It's only going to be the poorest Americans who are ever going to be targeted in the first place. And then theoretically, you have the ability to challenge that forfeiture, especially if you didn't commit a crime, and get it back. If you have the resources to actually do that in time and legal fees.
That's right.
And the poorest Americans are unlikely to have that. And so this is a fundamentally regressive way to fund police departments that at the federal level and unfortunately at the state and local level is very popular. Mm-hmm. And that's why it was to the credit of Eric Holder and Barack Obama to fight against it, at least to start that process. And so unfortunately, it looks like we're going to go racing right back into the past, into the dark past of the American criminal justice system.
Well, no one should have been surprised.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we are going to have to break now for the second hour. I'm going to be moseying on down the dusty trail. But you're going to be taking over. Brett Ehrlich of TYT Network's Pop Trigger is going to be joining us. A lot of awesome stories to cover there.
Yep.
So stay with us.